Welcome to the Pet Loss Companion. I'm Ken Dolan Del Vecchio, and I'm here with my friend and co-author Nancy Saxton Lopez, and a special guest who we'll be introducing in just a couple minutes. And this is the Pet Loss Companion podcast, which is a program that we developed as a way to expand the reach of our book, The Pet Loss Companion: Healing Advice from Family Therapists Who Lead Pet Loss Groups. And a lot of what we do when we have our program is we read letters from audience members about their stories of losing their pet and how they're doing in the grief process and how their healing is going. And so if you'd like to send us a letter, you can reach me at kenddv@gmail.com, and you can reach Nancy Saxton Lopez at NSAXTONLOPEZ at CSMPC.com. All the information I'm sharing in the beginning is in the description that accompanies either the live broadcast or one of the replays. So you can reference it there. You can support our program in a lot of different ways. The most recent addition is the Substack, where we share our correspondence with listeners and the photographs that they've sent us. And so you'll see the photos of their beautiful animal companions, and you'll see the back and forth that we have had with them in terms of discussion over email. You can also support us through Venmo and PayPal and a monthly subscription. This program is a friend of Dakin Humane Society in Springfield, Massachusetts. Dakin is a shelter where you can adopt, rescue pets, but they also offer all kinds of resources and programs that support the bond that we have with our companion animals. And one of those resources is a cost-free Zoom pet loss support group that I facilitate once a month. It's on the second Tuesday of the month, and it runs from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, and it's cost-free, and you can zoom in from anywhere you are situated, and we have people who zoom in from all across the U.S. and often across the world, and so it's an interesting mix and always very poignant and helpful for all of us, and I always learn something as well from that and gain some solace. The next one will be on May 14th. And if you are interested in joining, please RSVP as soon as you can. The link is in the description, because we have to cap the program. And therefore, it'll be great if you can join us, and certainly click the link as soon as you know that you might be able to do that. Please consider subscribing on YouTube, because that helps to increase the visibility of the program for people who may very well benefit from it. And so thank you if you have already done that, and please consider doing so if you haven't already. And finally, we'd like to just mention that we have an affiliation with a company called Bereave. Bereave creates these really finely crafted granite memorial plaques that would be something that you could use in a memorial garden or a gravesite or on a place in your home where you keep mementos. And I think that Nancy is holding
I've got Bailey
example that they sent to us. And if you purchase this memorial plaque, you will also be giving a measure of support to our program as well. So let's introduce our guest. And we're so happy to have you here, Dr. Karen Fine. Dr. Karen Fine is a holistic veterinarian who is fascinated by the relationships between animals and their people. She's an associate veterinarian at Central Animal Hospital in Leominster, Mass. And for 25 years, she owned and operated her own house call practice in Central Massachusetts. Dr. Fine is certified in veterinary acupuncture through the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. She is a leading expert in the emerging field of veterinary narrative medicine and has authored a textbook called Narrative Medicine in Veterinary Practice. We highly recommend her book. It is a wonderful, wonderful exploration. And I have to say, and I've said this a few times, it is so validating, and it leaves you feeling like you have a great deal of lingering support from Karen as you navigate the terrain of loving and losing our best animal friends. And so with that, Nancy is going to start us off with a question for Dr. Fine.
And thank you, Dr. Fine. We're really excited about having you.
Thank you so much.
So we'd like to have a little more information on what narrative medicine is.
Sure. And first of all, thank you for that lovely introduction. And that really was my goal in writing the book. I feel like I see a lot of human suffering, and I really wanted to address that. So that was really why I wrote that book, from my heart to people who are suffering with, you know, pet loss, mm-hmm. and dealing with their pet's illness. So narrative medicine was something I sort of stumbled across when I was doing some research for my memoir. And I found out it's kind of a thing in human medicine, and it's in the US, and it's also international. And I was actually invited to write a textbook because there was a publishing company in the UK that was looking for a veterinarian to write about narrative medicine for veterinarians. And what narrative medicine is it's sort of like the good parts of old-fashioned medicine, where you're looking at the patient's story. So instead of seeing the patient as a number or a representative of what disease they have, say diabetes, you're looking at them as a person with a life story. And that can also impact things like how they make decisions, what they're afraid of, you know, what their home life is like, what do they think about medication, disease causation, those sorts of things. So in veterinary medicine, it's really the person who's the animal caretaker, mm-hmm. that you're looking at the story. And it's also the story of the animal and the human and potentially the family. You know, the animal may live with several people, may live with just one person. What does that animal mean to that person? If it's a working animal, that might be a different relationship. And it can be a different relationship, and one person can have different relationships with different animals at the same time or through the course of their life. So it's really, it's that sort of thing. And it's sort of seeing them as, you know, what does that story mean to them? And what is this person going to do with, say, news you might be giving them about their pet's health? Not everybody's going to react the same way. And what are their goals for this animal for treatment and that kind of thing? And also, what are their feelings about this? And one example could be, and this actually came from human medicine, and I put it in my book because it completely applies to veterinary medicine, is that somebody comes in with an animal. So in the human example, it's a parent coming in with a child with severe eczema and allergies. And that's one of the most frustrating things we see as veterinarians, is allergies. And people are like, I've tried this, I've tried that. Why is my animal not better? So part of that is me, you know, helping them to understand that a lot of times these are genetic, you know, it's a frustrating thing to treat, but addressing the caretaker's frustration is a big part of it. And also saying, you know, most people in your situation are frustrated. This is a very frustrating situation, and giving them that validation and also telling them maybe, you know, you're doing a really good job. Because when you're trying and trying and your animal's still itching and keeping you up at night, you know, it can be hard to, you know, you're just feeling frustrated. So part of that is addressing those, you know, those emotions that people come in with. And there's a physician who is a leading practitioner in the UK. And I love how he describes narrative medicine, is that somebody comes in with a narrative. And together you co-create a new narrative, and that narrative might be, yeah, it really is lousy that my animal friend has this issue, but we're doing what we can, and now we're going to try this new thing and see if that helps, and I'm doing a good job, you know. So it may not be great, here's an easy fix, but it, right. You know, just addressing those things. And it doesn't mean that this animal has something that my childhood pet had that, you know, didn't go well or something like that.
It's so validating to hear you talk about the reference to old style medicine. You know, when we actually used to have a physician who understood and knew my family and knew all about me, instead of having five different specialists and one who you see once a year, a general practitioner. So it sounds so helpful.
Well, also, you're getting to the feeling. And I think people really need to know that you know what they're feeling. Yeah. Because then that really makes a difference. Because, she gets it, you know. Yeah. And you acknowledge and validate that. So this is good. It's very nice. So we wanted you to talk about Rana, right?
I thought for a long time about writing this book, and then Rana was my beloved dog who got sick. She got cancer. She wasn't actually sick. She got cancer. She had a little lump in her mouth, which turned out to be something horrific, what oncologists call a bad actor. And it was not able to be surgically removed. And for a long time, she didn't feel anything with it. But I cooked for her, and I had her on a lot of herbs and supplements, and because there wasn't really a lot that Western medicine could offer. And I had just learned how to do acupuncture. So I asked a lot of my teachers about what could help her. And she lived for much longer than she was supposed to, but she still was only 5 when she died. And she was my what's called heart dog. And I'm not sure who coined that. It was not me, but somebody, you know, coined that phrase to mean like, you know, you may love many, many, you know, dogs or cats or whatever, but sometimes there's just a really special one. And of course it was so, you know, poignant that she was not able to live very long. So that's also really, really difficult that, you know, she was basically in her prime when, you know, when she died and when she was diagnosed with this, you know, very aggressive type of cancer, that there was nothing, you know, I still found myself thinking, what did I do something? Did I not do something? And I've told people that for years, you know, it's nothing that you did or didn't do. And what causes cancer? That's the $64 million question. Mm-hmm. You know, I've told that to people many times, and I had to sort of, you know, tell it to myself. And I really, really struggled with her diagnosis and eventually her loss. And mm-hmm. I think your book would have really helped me at the time. And even though I had seen therapists before in my life, I didn't think of seeing a therapist to deal with my grief, my anticipatory grief, or my grief after she died. It just wasn't really on my radar. And I think it just wasn't as well known of a thing at that point, because she died in 2005.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk some about how you lived with the anticipatory grief? Because you do that so beautifully through the text.
Thanks. It was a real struggle for me. And it took me a long time. And I went on antidepressants, and I was just crying all the time at first when she was first diagnosed. And I also even had what's it called when you the season comes around and it's that
seasonal affective disorder.
Sorry?
Seasonal affective disorder?
No, not seasonal affective disorder, but I was so traumatized by her diagnosis that when that
anniversary reaction.
Oh, an anniversary, right.
Okay. An anniversary. Yeah, and I'd never had that happen before. And it was springtime, which I love. And here I was getting all depressed. Yeah. And it's, you know, it was her diagnosis even more than her death, which caused me trauma, because it really rocked my world. And I think to some extent, you know, I'm an optimist, and not that I don't know that, you know, unfair and bad things happen all the time, but it was, you know, I think the most unfair bad thing that had ever happened to me. And I didn't really know how to process it. And I really struggled with dealing with it. And then I learned so much from my dog herself. So she was feeling great. And if she wasn't feeling great, I would have, you know, made a decision much sooner. But she, you know, I'd be so sad. And then I'd watch her and she'd be chasing her tail. And I'd think, well, she's fine. You know, why am I such a mess? And I tried to learn from her. And then I got to the point where I would think, you know, okay, not today. It's not going to be today. Yeah. And then I really tried to be in the moment and with her. And it was still, you know, very difficult time for me. And it gave me a lot of understanding about anticipatory grief. And I see that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I see it all the time. And I was actually teaching narrative medicine to some veterinary students. And there was a veterinary student who said, she said, oh, that's what it is. And she said, I thought I was crazy. She said, I was crying and crying just thinking about my dog dying. And she said her dog was like 2. But she You know, and I actually think if you work with animals, if you work with animal healthcare, you see animals die young. You see bad things happen to animals. You're probably more likely to experience anticipatory grief because you go home to your own dog and you think, or cat or whatever, and you think,
what's going
to
happen?
That could have been, you know, that was so sad. It was so traumatic. And that could have been my animal. So you appreciate them, but you also may experience more anticipatory grief. And I feel like I see it a lot with people.
Yeah. The anxiety is always there because you never know what is going to happen.
No, right? You don't. You really don't. And there's some very traumatic times where it's been, you know, very sudden, whether it's an accident or an illness. Things can happen very suddenly with animals, and that's very shocking. And with Rana, it was sort of the opposite. You know, it was a long, drawn out thing, which I was very glad about. But it was also, you know, part of me wished that she had lived the same amount of time, but I had had less time to deal with her illness. But every day with her was so precious.
It's very interesting to me what you said about the veterinary student whose dog is two, because my dogs are now 2.5 years old. And having had a number of dogs, I look at them, when I say goodnight to them, I say to myself, you have to cherish them because their lives are so short. And it's just such a weird thing to know that even if they live 14, 15, 16 years, it's still short. And
it's so never
I don't feel like it's crazy that I think that way when I say goodnight to them.
But I think it's also good that you said, important that you say, I'm going to live in the moment with it. Go back to that, because what happens is we do get caught in that, and then we get so anxious and upset, and then we just have to say, look, like, she's here now or he's here now, and we're going to enjoy every minute of this.
Yes, you know, and I really learned to do that. I've done yoga for decades, but when I was diagnosed with cancer, which was years after my dog had cancer, I took the UMass Mindfulness, the MBSR class, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, and that really helped me to focus on living in the moment and to be better able to catch myself if I started to spiral. And I come from a long line of catastrophic thinkers. So, you know, that's sort of where my brain automatically goes. And I feel like I think I used to feel like there was actually some benefit, you know, that if I could obsess about something enough or worry enough, that it would have some protective power.
I get that. But it's a process. And when you do that mindfulness, remember, they help us live in the moment too, because that's all they do is live in the moment, right?
Exactly.
So we have to be in the moment with them.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could talk about your commentary that animals don't, they have a lot of emotions around the end of their lives, but you don't see fear. I find that to be so helpful. And I believe many people will be so helped by you talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of surprising to me that people are afraid of death, because I feel like I'm, you know, having seen so many animals, it's not something that people talk about very much, but I've actually talked about it with my best friend, Lisa, who's in the book. And I think I realize, you know, a lot of people are afraid of death. They don't want to talk about it. It's a taboo topic. And to me, you know, watching so many animals, and I have euthanized hundreds of animals, I mean, hundreds, you know, I feel like they're not afraid. And I feel that most of the time, these animals are dying anyways, and I'm preventing them from, you know, maybe a few days of suffering and or hours to days of suffering. Most of the time, and that these animals know that their bodies are breaking down and they are not afraid. They are recognizing that this is an internal process that's happening, just in the same way they would as if it was a female animal who was about to give birth. So they're not reading, you know, you know, what's that book about what to do when you're expecting? They're not reading The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy. They're not, you know, how, you know, they're not having language in terms of someone telling them what to expect. They are listening to their body. They are listening to their intuition, to their instincts. What, you know, what do I do now? Okay, I find a safe space. I make a borrow. You know, this is what I do. This is how I deal with it. Oh, okay, here's a puppy. Here's a kitten. I'm going to lick it. You know, how do they know what to do? They listen to their internal voice. And I feel like that's what's happening when an animal is dying. They know that they're dying. They isolate themselves. They stop eating. They recognize that this is a process that is going on inside their body. And I'm very in tune to fear in animals because I don't want them to be afraid when I'm working on them. And I can also get injured, or my staff or a client, you know, the pet owner can get injured. So I'm very in tune to animals being fearful. And I don't feel like I've seen animals, you know, sort of afraid of death.
Yeah. That's so helpful. We have a couple comments. Let me just see what people are saying. So we have, let's see, Alyssa, who's saying, what are your thoughts on this new drug that it can extend the life of our dogs? And then there's one more. I'll go back to hers in a moment, but so agree about appreciating each moment with our animals. My dog died a few weeks ago. I see living dogs on the street and think about the spark of life that had been within our guy. It's precious.
It's so precious. It's so precious. Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very difficult time when it's just very recent. I'm so sorry. And then in terms of this new drug, I would say it's too early to know. I've heard about it, but I haven't heard very much about it. I do acupuncture and I feel like that can help. I feel like I've seen, you know, if you take an animal that's elderly or has multiple issues, if they're feeling better, they're usually going to live longer. So, and many things, you know, sort of lifestyle wise can help them to live longer. So I would say it's too early to tell. Many years ago, there was a veterinarian, a company touting anabolic steroids, which are which people use to build muscle mass. But somebody sort of, I think, I'm not sure why this veterinarian had tried it on a dog. And so that was sort of, you know, for a little while, that was like, ooh, this can actually, you know, with an older dog, it can kind of give them a new lease on life for a little while or something like that. And that was over 20 years ago. And it was like a little short bubble. But so I don't know. I would say the jury's still out. And certainly anything that can help them live longer, I'm all about. I would say it's too early. I haven't seen anybody kind of jumping on a bandwagon because a lot of times you don't know about side effects and stuff like that, which is sort of just the same thing about CBD. You know, so a lot of people are like, CBD is the next best thing. I'm going to give it to my animal. And, you know, it can cause potentially liver enzyme elevations, diarrhea. So really we need more research is what we need. And hopefully that's going to be happening. And with the next 5 to 10 years, we'll have more information on, you know, CBD and the benefits and the potential risks and that sort of thing, just as an aside.
Well, that's interesting because I didn't realize that about CBD.
Yeah. So it really needs to be, I think, studied more. And then just to go back what I was saying about fear, I think a lot of what people don't want to leave. We're thinking ahead. So we're thinking, I don't want to miss this, that, and the other thing. I want to be around for this. So some of that is, you know, so fear, I don't know. See, I feel like I don't understand the fear part because to me, the actual dying part doesn't seem like something I would be afraid of. I wouldn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. And that's different. And I feel like I do see that with animals sometimes. And I feel like I've seen some animals kind of hang on for their people. The people that are, you know, so maybe the person is in a really difficult situation in their life and they've been emotionally relying on this animal and this animal's very bonded and doesn't want to leave. And I've seen them sort of hang on for longer than I would have thought they would. And that probably happens with people too. You know, somebody in a difficult situation. You know, I don't deal with people, so I don't know. But that I feel like is a little different than being afraid. You know, so fear, I don't think the animals are afraid. And I also don't think they're afraid, you know, sort of that moment of getting the injection. I don't think it's as, it's much more fraught for people.
Oh yes.
Yeah, we know
it's much more fraught.
Yeah.
Because we put our emotions on there, right? So, yeah. And we're like, oh my God, you know, what's going on? And I, and you're in that process of ending of life for your companion. And it's really, great. It's really hard.
And so, Karen, I'm wondering also if you could just talk about how you hold on to Rana now that she's no longer here physically. How do you, because this is such a challenging part for many people when they're grieving.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's still a relationship with them and that, okay, they're not here and I understand that, but there's still, it was, if you have a very meaningful relationship with someone, then they can still be part of your life. And I, you know, maybe our culture doesn't recognize that as much as it should, but that's a very valuable relationship. And I remember thinking like, I don't want to forget it. And I also don't want to kind of feel like I imagined it all, you know, that this was this very precious thing to me and I don't want to, you know, kind of discredit it. And I think in our culture too, it's very quick to be like, oh, okay, somebody died. You're expected to be over it, you know, fairly quickly. Yeah. And, you know, these things, you know, and some types of grief, you know, maybe you never get over.
Yeah.
Right.
You live with it and they're part of you, which can be a wonderful thing. And I think there's many different ways. And, you know, some of the things you talk about in your book, you know, in terms of, you know, talking about them with people who understand. Mm-hmm. Right. Fortunately, you know, working as a veterinarian, I'm surrounded mm-hmm. by people who understand. And even if people don't, they think, well, Karen's a veterinarian, so she's kind of not surprised.
They give you a pass.
Yes, they get a pass.
So there's something I love the title of the book, The Other Family Doctor. I think that is such a wonderful, you know, explanation, right? Because they are our family.
They are our family.
Right. And I think that's great. But there, you also talk at the end about the gifts that you get, what you've learned from all of the relationships with your beautiful companion animals. And I think, may I quote?
Sure.
Okay. So what animals have taught, and then the paragraph is, that's why we love creatures who will not outlive us. That's why we put our hearts on the line for them. Why we avoid travel to be with them. Why we spend our savings to keep them healthy. Why we deal with all of the messes and all the hassles, because doing so teaches us about being human. Loving animals teaches us about being alive. And that's how you end the book. I think it's a wonderful passage.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, do you have any ending comments that you'd like to share with the people who are viewing or listening?
You know, just that I think a lot of people feel alone in some of these emotions and some of these reactions to, say, you know, anticipatory grief or my animal died 3 weeks ago or whatever it is. And I see these things all the time. And that's really what I wanted to say to people was that these are profound relationships mm-hmm. in many people's lives. And, you know, sometimes it's somebody who just lives with that one animal and that's, you know,
that's their family.
That's their next of kin. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's somebody who has, you know, a whole extended family living with them and a very rich and fulfilling life. And that doesn't mean you're immune from a profound relationship with an animal. And there's so many of them. And I just wanted, you know, so much to validate people and explain that, you know, these things, and people don't talk about it, but they talk about it to their veterinarian.
Right.
And I heard so many people say, and a lot of times women will say, my husband didn't cry when his grandmother died, but he, I've never seen him this upset,
right.
You know, and so many people are so upset or they're surprised maybe by the depth of their grief.
Yeah. They're very surprised how they react.
Yeah.
And I think that they're crazy.
You know, it's just a dog. And maybe they grew up with that. It's just an animal thing. But that's not how they feel. So then they have to kind of, you know, and that's that kind of narrative medicine piece is that what's their story? You know, what were animals like when they were growing up. Okay, one died, you got another one potentially. Mm-hmm. So now you're feeling this, you know, these very deep, you know, emotions, and what do you do with them? They're not what you expected potentially. No. But they're very, very, very common. And one nice thing about social media is if people write something, you know, a story about, oh, I just lost my animal, the people who understand are going to be there for them. And it might be someone you like, you know, you're on Facebook with, but you never see, and they might be, you know, write this.
They connected.
Yeah, they might connect and be the one who says something that to really comfort you. And the people that you're closer to may not have those words. Maybe they haven't.
We've seen that too.
Well, Dr. Karen Fine, we want to thank you so much for your time with us. And we want to remind people again that her book is The Other Family Doctor, A Veterinarian Explores What Animals Can Teach Us About Love, Life, and Mortality. It's a wonderful book, and we recommend it highly. We also want to just remind you, if you find this program useful, please do subscribe on YouTube. That's always helpful in terms of the visibility of the program. Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great, and I really value the work that you're doing so much. Thank you so much. It's very needed.
Oh, thanks.